How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay them, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Melodies.
Hey there, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network here Monday through Friday on a trade deadline week. We are the Rain and Jays, John Corrales, Jay King, running through every damn rumor, every damn tweet, every damn emoji. You know what you're listening for. We know what we're here to talk about. So Jay, let's get to it. I wish this was more than just the podcast, because then right now I just put eye emojis as we talk to you.
My eyes are doing the eye emoji look. Like, I'm looking to the side, wide-eyed. I'm in eye emoji form.
Well, how podcast. Funny is it that Isaiah tweets the eye emoji for whatever damn reason he did? He did it, and
he had to be just messing with
you,
everyone,
you
right?
Would think that he was probably sitting there lit with some of his friends saying, hey, watch this. And then next thing you know, Mike Zarin is tweeting like, all right, here's the NBA in 2017. IT tweets out eye emoji, a single eye emoji. And Mike Zarin, the assistant GM of the Boston Celtics, is fielding 24 phone calls from reporters saying, what does this mean? So...
Well, to be fair, he had tweeted out the eye emoji before they signed Al Horford. Like, I think it was a few hours before they signed Al Horford. I don't know whether that was the last time he used the eye emoji, but I remembered him putting that out there right before the Horford thing. So it wasn't, like, totally crazy to think he might be foreshadowing a move, but he was either – like watching a great movie or observing some like new shocking YouTube clip he just found, or he was just messing with,
or them, which maybe he was using the SeatGeek app, which is the smartest, easiest way to find tickets for you to see games up close and in person this season. We'll talk more about that in a few minutes. That deserves the eye emoji though. It's pretty funny that, okay, besides the eye emoji, and besides the eye emoji eliciting 24 phone calls to the assistant GM, is it bigger that there's a precedent for the eye emoji? I think that might be the biggest development in all of this, that there is a precedent that when you see the eye emoji from Isaiah Thomas, that means something, rather than it just being some limited whatever thing.
But now it doesn't mean anything anymore.
Doesn't it?
So he's thrown us all for a loop. Jay Crowder came a few hours later. He tweeted out some emojis.
Andre Drummond, I mean, the next day.
Yeah. Twitter went a little mad for a little while. There was madness on Twitter. It was one of those nights when it was pretty funny to be on Twitter because everyone was freaking out about what these stupid emojis might have meant. And we still haven't found out. We still don't know what all these emojis are.
Who knows?
Andre Drummond looked mighty pissed at his press conference, so I'll tell you that much. When he was at practice,
yeah,
He looked pretty pissed off talking about the trade rumors, but nobody knows what the rash of emojis means. It's probably just people deciding they want to screw with everyone.
Okay,
else.
So let's dive into the rumors. That's what anybody wants to talk about right now. So the Boston Celtics are involved in a number of rumors / speculation / total bullshit. There's varying degrees. We know that the Celtics and the Chicago Bulls have had at least initial discussions about Jimmy Butler. And I'm sure the Celtics have had what would qualify as initial discussions about a lot of guys from a lot of teams. But I think Butler is probably the guy that means the most at this point. So
Jimmy Butler and Paul George, those are the two guys that have become the Celtics' top targets.
But, and look, I tweeted out the eggplant emoji tonight. That's strictly me just thinking about the Paul George potential for a trade. But the Paul George stuff is just pure speculation. There's no indication that the Pacers are at least entertaining the thought, like Chicago is at least entertaining the thought of Jimmy Butler. And to hear,
yeah, I mean, the Celtics and Bulls definitely had conversations at draft night about Jimmy Butler, and things, I mean, it was pretty serious. It went pretty close to, you know, the buzzer when the Celtics finally took the number 3 pick. And like you said, Indiana, like they're, so Chicago, there's at least some indication they would consider moving Butler. Indiana, who knows? But at some point, you know, he has a year and a half left on his contract. He has said a lot of things this year about not loving the situation that the Pacers are in. And unless they do a lot over the next year and a half to improve their team, to improve that situation, or if he becomes a designated player and he becomes eligible for that huge deal that they can offer. And you know what? He's not going to probably make All-NBA this year. So the Pacers would have to be risking losing him for nothing if they hold on to him through next trade deadline. And obviously there's a lot of time for them to continue to make that decision, and they don't have to rush into anything yet. But at some point, they will have to make a decision. Do we risk losing Paul George, or should we trade him to a team like the Celtics that has a lot of assets and can turn us into can kickstart our rebuild around a young, promising talent like Miles Turner?
I think that from the outside looking in, it feels like an eventuality that you have to move on. It feels that way. But Paul George, I think, is such tremendous talent that if you find the right fit around him, and Miles Turner is probably going to be a great player in the league, you've got kind of two of those guys. If you can find a way to find that third guy and get the right fit, then you're on your way. The problem is that Indiana's made some really terrible decisions. The fact that Al Jefferson's on that roster, after you declare that you want to play a pace and space type of game, and then you go out and get Al Jefferson, I mean, come on. There's contradictions here. And I've never known Larry Bird to get desperate, but that's him as a player. As a front office guy, maybe that's what he's become. Maybe he's just becoming so desperate to make sure that he can keep a transformative player like Paul George that he's going to make a mistake. But I really do think that he's going to make a mistake, which kills me to say, really does. Kills me to say that I think Larry Bird's going to make a fatal mistake in Indiana, but he's already gone down that road. He might as well, I think, and maybe I'm biased because our team would be the beneficiary, but he's in that classic position of purgatory. And I define purgatory as the fourth or fifth seed, not like some people do the seventh or eighth seed. That fourth or fifth seed where you think you might be close and you're tempted to try to make moves, and that's where you make stupid mistakes. He's in that spot. This is where you need a cold, calculated, hinky-ass mentality, dare I say, to have the balls to blow it up and find the best possible haul for your superstar and not do what Vlade did, not do what the Kings did. Build your team properly. Hit rock bottom for as short amount of time as possible. Why can't they go to Boston and get one or maybe both of those Brooklyn picks? I don't know if I don't think it's going to be both at this point, but at least one of those picks, maybe some future picks, some young talent, and rebuild that way. It makes sense to me.
Yeah, but and it does, unless you're the Pacers and you've got a young star and he's a four-time All-Star and he's a two-way player and you hope for any way to build a team around him and keep him. And like it's tough to lose a player that good. And it's tough to decide to move on from a player that good. And especially in the Pacers case, you know, they have contended with Paul George before. I don't think Indiana is a great free agent destination. Like, as you said, maybe it's time for them to blow it up, but that's a tough decision, especially considering right now Paul George has a year and a half left on his contract. And there's that designated player exception, which if he qualifies for an All-NBA team, then he will be eligible for a huge, huge deal that only the Pacers can give him. And that would give them a huge advantage to sign him and see if they can go ahead and build a better team around him in
but
the future.
He has said today that he's not motivated by the money, which is easy to say before you actually get that money.
Yeah, but if did you see the rest of his comments? It was kind of like, the money's not driving me, but the money would be pretty cool if I had it.
Sure.
Like basically, I want to make All-NBA team because it's a great honor, not because I would then make however many more million dollars.
Right.
Is what it was. It wasn't like he's saying, I don't care about the money, I don't think.
Yeah, of course. And nobody is going to say that a player would willingly give up the money. But if at that point, the money, when you're that big a star, you can make that up. He's got sponsorships. He's got other ways to make up the money. You can make up money as a superstar player in the NBA. And let me tell you, if worse comes to worse, you could actually find ways to save money by doing things like downloading the SeatGeek app. That's a great way to save money if you're trying to buy tickets to a game, a concert, a show, whatever it is that you need to buy tickets to. It's the smartest, easiest way to find tickets to games and shows you want to see up close and in person. Now, I have used it. As I've said before, I know Jay has used it. You can buy it for yourself. You can buy it as a way to give people a gift. And you know with SeatGeek, you're always going to get the best deal because SeatGeek does all of the work for you. They search all of the ticket sites. They go and compare prices. They put it on a simple app that's easy to use that you can see the red, the yellow, the green that tells you the bad, the middle, the good deals so you can get a good value. You're going to get the most bang for your buck. And on top of that all, because you'd think that would be enough, but it's not, they guarantee all of it 100%. So you just go to their customer service. If you have a problem, they guarantee your ticket purchase 100%. And then on top of that, you get $20 off of your first SeatGeek purchase through us by using the promo code LO Celtics. Download the app, go to the settings tab, add a promo code, enter LO Celtics. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LO Celtics today. And maybe in a couple of days, you'll be buying tickets to see Paul George in the Boston Celtics or
probably
Jimmy
not.
Butler in the Boston Celtics.
Probably not. But you'd get free money back though, so
you'll
that'd be big. How funny would it be though if after Kevin McHale traded Kevin Garnett to Danny Ainge and the Celtics. If Larry Bird
so great.
Goes ahead and trades Paul George,
how
to the
awesome
Celtics,
would that be?
It would be unbelievable.
I would need next is Robert Parrish to go to run the Golden State Warriors, a former team of his, and trade us Steph Curry.
Yeah.
That would be the next logical step, wouldn't it, after all of that?
Yeah, I think that would work. You know, or who knows, maybe the Bulls front office, who knows whether they're on rocky terms, you know, go throw like Jerry Sichting in there. Sichting. See what happens, man.
You know, you never know. You never know. All right. So I think these are pipe dreams to a certain degree. Butler, I think, is more likely than Paul George, but that's just saying, like, you're more likely to hit the Mega Millions rather than the Powerball. I think both franchises are unwilling to give up their star and feel like they can build around their star player. Paul George, I think, is much more entrenched in Indiana's future than Butler, but I think there's some appetite to trade Butler, but not enough of an appetite to trade Butler before Thursday at 3 p.m. I do agree, however, Jay, with your thought process, and I want to give you full credit, that you've been focused on the trade lottery day. That if those ping pong balls come back with the number one pick and the Celtics have access to the number one pick with their swap, then that can be enough to shake a star free, or at least make it more likely.
Yeah, and what it is too is the value difference between the first pick and the fourth pick is a huge deal. And the uncertainty right now, whether you're the Celtics or whether you're the other team they'd be dealing with, the Bulls, the Pacers, whoever, the fact that you don't know whether it will be the first pick, which will probably be Markel Fultz or Lonzo Ball, and those guys right now are regarded on a different level than everybody else, or the fourth pick, where you still might get a potential star, but it won't be such a sure thing, I think, as those other two guys. So there's a huge value difference there, and I do think the uncertainty around that could push more serious conversations until the summer. And it could go both ways, you know, like if the Celtics get number one, they could decide, okay, it's easier for us to go get Jimmy Butler or Paul George now. Or they could say, you know what, we've fallen in love with Markelle Fultz. We would love to have him on a rookie contract for 4 years, on his extension after that for another 5 years. We would love to have 9 years of reasonably cheap Markelle Fultz. And you know what, if that keeps us from getting one of these guys, we're okay with that because of how good we think Markel Fultz would be. And I don't know what the decision would be there, but just the fact that you don't know what that pick will be at this summer, things will be a lot more clear, and where that pick falls will really change, I think, the Celtics options. It won't change that you have to include the pick, but it will change whether you have to give, you know, Jay Crowder, Marcus Smart, and something else, or like maybe just one or two of those pieces.
Yeah.
So it will be a huge difference depending on where.
I agree.
Is.
I completely agree that some teams might be more willing to make a move knowing that they have the number one or number two pick. It almost is like the Durant Oden draft, where if you know you have the number one, number two pick, you're going to be fine. I think it goes a little bit deeper this year, but that seems to be how it's shaking out this year. So June might be the decision maker. So Celtics fans might need to kind of chill out. And that's hard to do because you've had the DeMarcus Cousins trade. You've had the Serge Ibaka trade. You've had some movement throughout the NBA. Teams are making deals. You know, tonight the Lakers and the Rockets made a deal. Lou Williams for Corey Brewer and a pick. So Magic Johnson running the Lakers.
that was a stunning move because if you've ever followed Magic Johnson on Twitter, if you've ever seen him analyze basketball games on TV, he, as bright as he was as a basketball player, he does not seem like the most advanced basketball evaluator. So, and he doesn't have any experience running an organization. And it was 2 days before the trade deadline, and Jeannie Buss fired her brother.
But
stomped on his neck, saying she should have done it a long time ago. Just an unreal, unreal set of circumstances overall.
That is. So let's think about, just for a second, what the NBA has been through over the past 2 weeks. Starting with Charles Oakley getting choked out and pulled out of Madison Square Garden, and the commissioner having to take the owner of the Knicks, James Dolan, and a legendary tough guy, Charles Oakley, and pull him to the principal's office. Okay, that's bad enough. Then you have the Kings pulling the DeMarcus Cousins deal, which, if you haven't listened to either of the Vertical podcasts with Woj or with Chris Mannix, start with the Woj one. And I know they're not in our network, and you should be listening to the Locked On Podcast Network, because we've got a tremendous lineup. Every NBA team, plus Locked On NBA, plus Locked On Fantasy. But take a minute and listen to the Vertical with Woj and the Vertical with Chris Mannix. Start with Woj, because basically Woj and Bobby Marks crush the Kings for their approach. That, in a nutshell, Vlade Divac, Peja Stojakovic, and Vivek Ranadive are the most inept trio leading a team ever. They don't go to games. They don't scout. They send their scouts out. The scouts come back with information. They say, screw you. We're going to trade. We're going to draft who we want anyway. And then in the next podcast, they clarify by saying it's even worse than that. So there's that whole King situation. And then on top of that, the Lakers, how do you fire your entire front office 2 days before the trade deadline? How do you do that?
it's totally stunning, man. Every time a dysfunctional team like the Lakers operates in such a state, in such a blindfolded state, or the Sacramento Kings do something stupid like trade Cousins for hardly anything, and then they could do something even stupider by revealing they had a better offer 2 days before that. Celtics fans should just be sitting there like, thank God we have Danny Ainge. Thank God we have owners who are not meddlesome and let smart minds do their jobs. And thank God we have Brad Stevens, who is a bright guy who apparently impressed All-Stars at the All-Star game, which who knows how much he really impressed them, but he we saw that pregame speech. That was a heartfelt pregame speech. That was nice. He got to spend time with a lot of guys the Celtics could target at some point, whether it's Jimmy Butler, Paul George, Gordon Hayward, who he also coached in college, of course. Might have been a nice weekend for him. But Celtics fans, like, the Celtics are in a good place from top to bottom with talent on the court, with smart people in the front office, with stability everywhere, and some of these other franchises just continue to drive their head into a brick wall. It's embarrassing how poorly some of these places are run.
God, it's horrible. Now,
like, you and I, we're two of the dumber people in New England, and we could run a basketball team better than some of these.
Speak for yourself.
Fine, you're not in New England. I'm one of the dumber people in New England. You're one of the dumber people in New York. And together we could run a franchise better than these people.
The technicality. Yeah, look, I admit I would be a horrible GM, a terrible, one of the worst GMs in the league. But I could do better than, honestly, I could do better than what the Kings did. I really do. I don't try to put myself into a team's shoes ever. I know how hard it is to be an NBA anything, like at any level, anything in the NBA. If you've reached the NBA anything, that is, you're at like the pinnacle. I fully, wholeheartedly believe I could be better at the Sacramento Kings GM job than Vlade Divac. So that's...
There it is.
You know what? I think there's a lot of people. Like, there's a lot of people that could do that job better than them. But whatever.
Since you're Mr. GM, would you go after Andre Drummond, who apparently might be available and is all pissed off about the trade rumors, and join the recent emotion
trades?
Shut up!
No! Sorry.
Not an Andre Drummond guy.
Andre Drummond's fine. He's a good player. He's a really good player. I'm not going to pretend he's not a good player. I just don't think it works for the Boston Celtics, all things considered. And this has been my Twitter life all day long. And granted, I spend a lot more time on Twitter, and part of me sickly enjoys the back and forth with things I disagree with. But Andre Drummond, good player, 23 years old, young guy, 7-footer, will solve a lot of the rebounding, will solve some of the defensive problems. But I think that he will pull so much away from the offense that he basically negates what he gives you, the problems that he fixes. So why would you trade for a guy that's got 4 years and approximately $100 million left on his deal that basically makes you break even on your deal? Like, so if he prevents 10 points defensively, but pulls 10 points off of your offensive production because he's clogging lanes offensively for Isaiah Thomas, and he's kind of not fitting into that four out type of shooting type of mentality, I just don't think paying that much for a pick and roll lob guy makes sense. You can get a very cheap pick and roll lob guy in that scenario that can grab a few rebounds. So, and on top of that, I think people, they're fixated on the rebounds because the Celtics have had so many problems rebounding. Rebounding is kind of overrated. Like, the Celtics lost games because they get crushed on the rebounding front, but if they could just get somebody that makes it not so bad, then they'll be okay. They don't need a guy that completely flips the rebounding numbers. They need a guy that doesn't make the rebounding numbers so bad. Because if you look at the top 10 guys, the top 10 teams in rebounding, they are Denver, Oklahoma City, Chicago, San Antonio, Utah, Detroit, Minnesota, Phoenix, Memphis, Golden State. Those are the top 10 teams in rebound differential. You got two great teams, one good team, Memphis is okay, and then a bunch of shitty teams. So the rebounding differential is not an indicator of your success. So we just need a guy to make the rebounding not so bad, not a guy to make the rebounding amazing.
Okay, you've got some strong takes on Andre Drummond, and see, I'm with you that Andre Drummond isn't the right piece for the Celtics. I tend to disagree with some of your reasoning. I think the ability to have a pick and roll guy would open up a new dynamic for the Celtics offense. Like, right now, they are succeeding largely with five guys who can shoot on the perimeter. But if you have a dynamic, super athletic, huge threat to catch lobs and roll to the hoop and finish around the bucket like Andre Drummond. That just adds a new dynamic to things. And yes, it changes you, but I don't know how much. I don't think it would hurt the offense necessarily. To me, what's wrong with Drummond and why I wouldn't make a move with Drummond, and probably why the Pistons are looking into trading Drummond, even though they have him under contract for 3.5 more years, I believe, is his progress has stalled out. Like, he's the same player now that he was 3 years ago in his second season in the NBA. Like, where has the progress been? Why is he not a better team defender now in his fifth year in the NBA? Why have the issues not gone away? Obviously, he's right. I believe he has the top rebounding percentage in the entire NBA. He's a physical monster, like just absolute beast. But from a positioning standpoint, his defense has never been good. The Pistons right now are 9 points per 100 possessions worse defensively when he's on the court. So, again, like there are too many issues there, and I think that's why the Pistons are looking into dealing him. And I think that's why the Celtics would likely stay away. As enticing as the thought of Andre Drummond, this like physical specimen, is, I don't think he's actually that talented as a basketball player, or that productive as a basketball player.
It's just not right. It's just not right. There's enough that doesn't make sense.
It's not right.
It doesn't make sense. And I know there are a lot of people, and this is my words of caution, that don't get so caught up in the weakness that has shown up this season, that this season is not the priority for the Boston Celtics. It's very easy to sit there and look at the Boston Celtics, who are the second seed in the East, the fifth best team in the NBA at this point, and sit there and say, holy shit, now is where we make our run. This is it. This is our time. No, this is not our time. This is a team that's kind of overachieving a little bit, and maybe a couple of teams that are underachieving a little bit, the Toronto Raptors in particular. But you don't overreact to a little bit of success right now. And I got to give Danny Ainge credit for that. You don't just go crazy right now when you have the ability, the possibility of either A, drafting a transformative player in the draft coming up, or B, trading that player for an absolute sure shot, game-changing superstar. And there's no way anybody can convince me that Andre Drummond is the game-changing NBA superstar. Because if he was, the Detroit Pistons, who a lot of knowledgeable NBA people and also me thought would be better than this, he would make them better than this, and he does not. So we need to get back to reality that Andre Drummond is a good player, but not right for the Boston Celtics. And maybe, who knows, maybe he goes down the Rajon Rondo route of a good player, theoretically, that no longer fits in what the NBA does very well or is very desirable at this point. So there's that.
I don't know about all that. I think he's a fine basketball player. I just wouldn't want to give up the assets that the Pistons would probably want to get him, and then have his contract maybe be a hindrance toward targeting somebody better than him along the road. And there are going to be better players that hit the market down the road. Andre Drummond right now is not a good not a great basketball player. He's fine. He's good, but he's not an elite basketball player. And the Celtics, I think, are targeting, as you said, elite basketball players. So yeah, out on Drummond, out on most people, George and Butler, guys.
Those
George
are the guys.
And Butler.
Well, by the time you listen to this, it'll be Wednesday at some point. which means you'll have somewhere between 36 and 24 hours before the trade deadline, which means the Boston Celtics will be getting ever closer to probably doing nothing. Sorry to say, but isn't that really, Jay, where we're going? The Celtics are probably not going to do anything, or at least nothing significant. I like, and I said it the other day, I like the PJ Tucker idea. I think that might be a way to go. A little bit of wing 3-and-D help, some rebounding there, and that, I think, kind of falls in line with what I was saying before about a guy who can help the rebounding be less shitty. And honestly, when I think of this team, the offense is great. The defense needs to get a little bit better. The rebounding needs just to be less shitty. And if it gets less shitty and becomes kind of like, the rebound's not great, then I'll be happy with the Celtics rebounding being not great, because a lot of good teams' rebounding is not great. And that doesn't make or break your chances for winning.
There you go. Less shitty.
That's
rebounding.
It. That's all I
the
want.
Story of the Celtics trade.
That's what I want. Look, the Celtics are the fifth best team in the NBA with shitty rebounding. They just need to be less shitty. They don't need to be awesome at it. They've been really good at a lot of things. Don't screw up Isaiah Thomas and his borderline MVP season just to get an awesome rebounder in here. That's not what we need. We need to have just simply a little bit less shitty rebounding. So that's my opinion. That's where we're going to end it. And I think to get less shitty tickets at NBA games, you should download the SeatGeek app.
To get really good tickets.
I don't think
tickets.
That's the tagline they're looking for. I think to get really great tickets. If you want less shitty tickets, get one of those other apps. If you want good NBA tickets or good tickets to a show or something else, you should get the SeatGeek app, because they not only will do all the work for you, they will give you $20 back after your first purchase with the promo code LOCELTICS. So do that. We will be back tomorrow, because the Locked On Celtics podcast is here Monday through Friday, especially during trade deadline week. We are, depending on when you're listening, within about 24 hours of the trade deadline. So a lot's going to happen, and we're going to talk about it all day, every day, Monday through Friday, here on the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, Jay King and John Corral.